League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Okay, the Patience Award goes to a very patient and composed U.S. Women's National Team defender, Becky Sauerbrunn, joining us now. Becky, thank you so much for being very, very patient there and sitting through all those commercials.
No problem.
Yeah, I was sitting here listening to the commercials and I was going, I wonder what Becky's thinking about this. So our question of the night, Becky, and by the way, the U.S. Women's National Team, we all saw it in dominating fashion, will be going to France. They dominate CONCACAF. So our question of the night was, who is the player more than any other when you were growing up that you wanted to watch?
Oh, wow. I was a huge Carla Overbeck fan. She was the ideal defender to watch growing up. And to this day, she's someone that I speak to and I ask her questions. I mean, she just had it all. She was just the epitome of a classy defender.
So you yourself, tell me about your major influences in the game, because your career is just, to me, is a model of consistency. Incredible professional attitude, both on and off the field. I mean, it's something I think that every young women's female soccer player in this country would look up to. Where did your influences come from?
Oh, wow. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, if you're speaking like soccer influences, I had a coach, Steve Swanson. He coached at the University of Virginia. He would make me watch film on the Italian men's back line, their national team. And so we're talking, you know, Cannavaro, we're talking Paolo Maldini. And so we would watch film, and he would say to me, like, you need to watch these guys. This is what you need to be able to do when you run a line. So as far as, like, soccer influences, as a mentor, but then for him to show me what, like, a world-class back line looked like and what world-class defenders looked like, for me that was huge to be able to see that and then try to emulate it.
U.S. Women's National Team defender Becky Sauerbrunn joining us. So when you all watch a game today, do you watch it for specifics? In other words, positionally, do you watch people, or are you just watching sort of the overall general patterns of the game?
It depends. Sometimes I'm watching it just purely for entertainment. And then if there's a player that I really appreciate, like a Bonucci that plays on Juventus, like I will look at him and watch him positionally, what he's doing, what decisions he's making.
So if you were talking to youth players, which you do a lot, and by the way, that's the one thing we love about the U.S. Women's National Team is that you get out there with the youth. Do you talk to them about modeling and, you know, watching games and share these experiences that you've had that have helped to mold your playing career?
Oh, absolutely. And I think the youth today are so lucky that soccer, both men's and women's, is so readily accessible through streaming, through the TV. Like, so many more games are being shown now than they were when I was growing up. And so you have these professionals on TV, and a lot of them are also in your backyard playing soccer on the weekends, you know, professionally. So to have these people that they can look up to, I think, is huge. And so I'm always pushing for the youth, watch soccer, study soccer. Be a student of the game, because the game is always changing. You have to be able to adapt to the game to really make a career out of it.
So I had the privilege of calling some of your games in this phase preparing for CONCACAF, and always enjoy calling your games. There was experimentation going on from Jill Ellis. In fact, you even were someone that positionally there was some experimentation. Talk about the process getting up to the CONCACAF tournament and how there was this trying thing out sort of period, doing some things differently tactically and positionally and personnel-wise under Jill.
Sure. So after the Olympics, when we, you know, crashed out early, Jill basically was like, we're hitting a reset button. And so it didn't matter who you were, how many years you've been on the national team, everyone was at the same level at stage zero, and she was just going to do a full evaluation of all the player pool. And then she was also going to play with formations and tactics, like you said. And so for the last, 2 years or so, that's what you've seen. I mean, we've tried different formations. We've done a 3-4-3. We've done 5-4-1 in games. We've just played with all these formations and different people in different spots. And I think she really just got her kind of starting group right before the tournament. And I think because we had done so much of that experimentation and seen and struggled, that we came to this final group and we just kind of gone through quite a bit before that, it kind of just really clicked. And I think people were building relationships at the right time. And I think this tournament fell at a perfect time for us in this kind of this cycle, this evaluation performance cycle, where the results that we always get good results, but it finally felt like our performances were matching the results. And going into a World Cup year, I think that's huge.
Is that uncomfortable for players? Because I know when I was moved positionally out of my comfort zone, sometimes I met it with resistance, which probably wasn't the thing to do. But thinking back now on it, when I'm listening to you, I did meet it with resistance. Would you see that sometimes from your teammates? And how did you guys support each other during that?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's hugely uncomfortable. I think people were left in a very uncertain spot, but I think it was actually intentional by our technical staff to see who kind of had the grit and the resiliency to deal with these, you know, fastballs. And so I think the group that she kind of solidified near the end was the group that throughout all the trials and tribulations kind of held strong and kind of, you know, showed up every day and controlled what they could control. And that's a hard thing as a professional. I think consistency is one of the toughest things to be.
Becky Sauerbrunn joining us. Okay, so I know your mom and dad and your family, you had two brothers, which is, I'm doing my great research here. But brothers sometimes can have an influence and motivate sisters, right? And vice versa. Did that happen with you growing up in your family with your brothers?
Oh, yeah. I mean, my brothers are 8 years and 4 years older, so there's a pretty big age gap. And, I mean, I would try to hang with them whenever they were, you know, playing football or baseball. And, I mean, they did not go easy on me. I was definitely a guinea pig for a lot of their pranks. And I credit them for just toughening me up. I mean, the hits that I can take, I think, go back to, like, just roughhousing in the house and things like that. They really put me through the ringer.
And Becky, by the way, also played at the University of Virginia. And as we all know, she is a World Cup winner and Olympic gold medalist. All right. So you guys cruised through CONCACAF. I mean, you just look so solid. You play Canada. I think you conceded one shot on goal in the game. Peaking and hitting the World Cup at the right stride, it's almost like you're going to have to hit a reset again, right? So after being so dominant in CONCACAF, what happens now the next couple months in the approach to what is the big dance?
So we're going to play an extremely hard schedule. We're going to try to get over to Europe and play a lot of European teams in preparation, kind of get used to being overseas and, you know, just not the safety of home and the comfort of home. And I think that there are still roster spots that are open. We're going from a 20-woman qualification roster to a 23-woman roster for the World Cup. So we're going to be adding players. And a lot can change over the course of a few months. And so really for us, it's going to be, can we maintain the momentum that we've gotten so far and still reach new levels? Can we shore up the things that maybe we're not world-class quite at, you know, stuff like easy things like free kicks and defensive set plays and things like that that can actually win or lose games. You know, can we get those to be where, you know, we are allowing no goals, but then we're also scoring on the other end? So I think there's little parts of the game that for us, we can always push to get better. And I think that'll be the focus for the next few months.
Yeah, that was great because you actually gave some reasons. So what are some of the things, if you look overall at the team right now, and then yourself personally, what are some of the areas that might come to mind that, look, you're always trying to improve on, which I know is all aspects of your game, but maybe some specifics?
As a team, I think where we can get the most improvement is when a team bunkers in and plays very defensive against us, is can we be quality in the final third where, you know, we can break down really tight defenses? And I think we have played a lot of teams that do that against us, both, you know, in CONCACAF and also around the world. So I think that's something that going into the World Cup, if teams are like, okay, let's not let the Americans, you know, score on us, that they will employ a tight defense. And so I think that we need to be more precise, and I think we need to have more variety in how we're able to score goals.
Becky Sauerbrunn joining us, remarkable career, for the United States national team and all throughout all the professional leagues in the United States. I'm not sure exactly how many caps you have, but I know it's around 150. Aaron Heifetz will probably correct me. So if I'm off a little bit, don't hold it against me. I just want to talk a little bit more about a couple of other topics here. And one of them is the Utah Royals, and you go into them. You spent a lot of time at FC Kansas City. You won a title there or titles there. Talk a little bit about the move to Utah now and what the soccer climate is like for the NWSL in Utah.
Yeah, I was very sad when FC Kansas City decided to fold. And so our roster got moved over to Salt Lake, and I had the decision to try to fight for somewhere else if I wanted to leave. But I think when I heard Laura Harvey was going to be the coach, and I found out it was in Salt Lake City, so it was going to be affiliated with Real Salt Lake, I was just excited to kind of be a part of something new and to grow something and to be there when, you're building the culture and you're building the soccer philosophy. And it's a rare thing to be able to start from scratch with that. And so I kind of wanted to do that and be a part of that challenge. And it was a good first season. I mean, I couldn't ask for better support, better staff. I think the soccer, by the end, it was getting there. We didn't make playoffs, but we were right outside of it. So that was disappointing, but bright for the future. And I think the NWSL, it's an interesting league. You know, there are strong owners and then some owners that aren't as invested or don't have as deep of pockets. And so, we're trying to expand to find more MLS or USL affiliated organizations that have a built-in infrastructure. I think that could be really helpful for us. But the league has lasted this long, and it's lasted, twice as long as any other women's pro league in this country. So I'm holding out hope that it's going to be here for many, many decades.
And without a question, I mean, I've talked to Jill Ellis about this. Without a question, this league has been a wonderful platform for identification for players that maybe would have not had the exposure.
Oh, yeah, very much so. It's to be able to play at that level day in and day out against some of the best national team and international players in the world. I mean, you quickly find out who can hang and who cannot hang. And so I think for Jill, it's wonderful to be able to spot new talent and to also see how your regulars are doing.
All right. I want to do a fun one. Tell my listeners, Becky, something different about you that maybe we don't know.
Ooh, something different about me. I love video games. I'm actually a huge Zelda fan, and I have played probably every single iteration of it and can spend hours of the day in front of the TV playing video games.
I retired after playing my 13-year-old nephew and getting destroyed, and that was the end of my video game career.
Oh, that's tragic. I'm sorry to hear that.
It was tragic, but I probably am better served doing other things in my case. All right, so when we see Jamaica qualify for this World Cup, I mean, that kind of touched my heart. First Caribbean nation to do it. Any thoughts on that coming out of this tournament, you guys being so dominant, but then seeing something like that happen to the country of Jamaica where, this is more than just a soccer success. This is something that can open the doors potentially for women in Jamaica, right?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's fantastic. And I mean, it was hard to see regulars like Costa Rica and Mexico not qualify or get even out of their group. But to see Jamaica qualify outright and then to see Panama and knowing that they've got that playoff, it's just wonderful for these new countries. And for me, it gives me hope that these federations will see their women and will invest more and so that they can get more out of their teams. I mean, Jamaica didn't have funding a couple years ago, and now they're going to their first ever World Cup. I mean, imagine where that team can go, some investment and some, support. So I was thrilled for them. They were so excited when they qualified. We could hear them locker rooms down the hall just celebrating, and they deserve it. They did wonderful.
It's incredible. Last question for you, Becky Sauerbrunn, and then we're going to let you go. And thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. We really appreciate it. It's been a fun interview up to this. You know, we watch how you as national team members handle things, and I don't think there's any question. You have tremendous influence. When it is getting competitive to get a place, to go to these places that few people ever get to go, a World Cup, an Olympics, and it gets that competitive, as we know it does. How difficult is that? Because you all seem to handle the competitive nature of making squads and being starters in a very, very good way.
I'll tell you, it's a special team. I think we all realize that it's an honor to even be in the pool for the national team. And you're right, it is extremely hard when it gets to be, you know, World Cup time, Olympic time, and these roster numbers are very small. And that's just team dynamics for you. And it's the culture that was created, you know, eras before us, that you're competitive, but first and foremost, you're a good teammate. And so, yeah, you're going to fight every day for a spot on the team or for playing time. But what's more important is that you're cheering the people on that are on the field or, you know, that you're vying for a spot with. So it's something that I'm always, you know, pleasantly surprised by. Obviously, you know, people can get upset and frustrated, but at the end of the day, everyone on that field or on that team is a good teammate. And I think that's what's made us as good as we are and has kept us as good as we are, is that at the end of the day, we love each other and we want the best for one another. And we know that team success is way more important than individual success.
I just got a note from Aaron Heifetz. Officially, you have 147 caps. That man is on top of it like you would not believe. And I know you know better than me. Listen, Becky, thank you for spending so much time with us. Sorry about that commercial break. Next time we'll time it better. We thank you very much. Congratulations on going to and qualifying for the next World Cup in France. And it's been a joy watching your career, and it'll continue to be a joy. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much.
All right, that's Becky Sauerbrunn. You name it, she's done it in the women's game and has done it with humility as well, which I think is something to be certainly reminded of.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.